This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Thursday, May the 4th be with you of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, pollinator protectors are celebrating the passage of state legislation to limit the sale of neonicotinoid pesticides. This time on the Cannabis Report, we'll get an update on the new state-funded loan program for cannabis social equity businesses. Then, Radio Nibbles host John Lindorf will be in to catch us up on local food news. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour. Then it's Kitchen Table Talk. Special guests are Rainbow Schultz of the Jamestown Mercantile and Liz Thomas, Boulder Farmers Market Manager. Then at 9:30, Dee Ryder will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead, but first, a look at the headlines with KGNU's Benita Lee.
The Colorado Parks and Wildlife Commission made history yesterday, unanimously approving the state's final wolf restoration and management plan. Commissioners held a marathon 9-hour meeting at the Colorado Mountain College's Spring Valley campus near Carbondale, and they'll do it again today. But the heavy lifting is now done after a multi-year process involving stakeholder and technical working groups, dozens of opportunities for public engagement, and more than 4,000 written and verbal comments on the draft plan released in December of last year. Wolves are slated to have paws on the ground on the last day of this year, but a coalition of ranchers, outfitters, and rural county commissioners have found bipartisan support in the state house for bills that could delay the restoration. The Navajo Nation has rejected the U.S. government's plan to create a buffer around historic Native American lands in New Mexico. The plan was intended to protect the Chaco Culture National Historical Park from oil and gas drilling and create environmental and economic justice for Native Americans. But tribal leaders say Navajo property owners could lose close to $200 million over the next 20 years in oil and gas royalties, pushing them further into poverty. Interior Secretary Deb Haaland first announced the land withdrawal process in 2021. According to a Western Energy Alliance press release, tribal officials say Haaland has mismanaged the process, failing to consult with the Navajo people. The Interior Department's proposed 10-mile buffer zone would cover about 35,000 acres. The Navajo Council made its recent announcement after their compromise plan to reduce the buffer zone from 10 to 5 miles was not considered by the Interior Department. The Boulder County Drug Task Force has found the veterinary tranquilizer xylazine in the county's illicit drug supply and are warning citizens to be aware and safe. KGNU's Jimmy Sirfoss reports.
Also known as tranq, xylazine can be mixed into pills or powder, making it hard for those using the drug to know it's present. The drug has not been approved for human use and has been linked to deaths across the country. It can cause drowsiness, slowed heart rate, and memory loss. Xylazine can lead to an increased risk of fatal overdose, especially when mixed with opioids or alcohol. Unlike fentanyl and other opioids, xylazine is not responsive to overdose reversal drugs like Narcan. If you do come across someone who is overdosing, officials say to call 911 immediately. I'm Jimmy Sirfoss for KGNU.
Prosecutors formally charged three teens Wednesday with first-degree murder and other offenses for throwing landscape rocks at several moving vehicles in the Denver metro area. 18-year-olds Nicholas Karolchik, Joseph Koenig, and Zachary Quack were charged with killing 20-year-old Alexa Bartel on April 19th. The teens allegedly hit six other cars during their rock-throwing spree. Two other drivers suffered minor injuries. According to the Associated Press, Karolchik told Jefferson County Sheriff's Office investigators that he and Koenig had thrown rocks at vehicles on at least 10 other days before Bartel was killed. Other charges included attempted first-degree murder, second-degree assault, and attempted second-degree assault. Karolchik and Quack gave different accounts about who threw the rock that killed Bartel. Workers for a Starbucks in Westminster won their vote to unionize on Tuesday. KGNU's Alyssa Palazzo has the story.
The Starbucks on 144th and I-25 is the 10th store to unionize in Colorado. Workers petitioned for their unionization and held a one-day strike in late March, calling for improved team hours and safety in the cafe. Starbucks Workers United said in a press release that the formation of the union isn't the end of the fight. It's time for a change. We need to have more partners standing up to corporate and letting them know that without us, there is no Starbucks. The Westminster workers join a nationwide movement of 8,000 baristas in over 300 locations. For KGNU, I'm Alyssa Palazzo.
Rocky Mountain National Park soon won't accept cash for permit and entrance fees. Starting June 1st, the park will only accept mobile or electronic payments. Visitors who must pay with cash can still buy a prepaid pass from the Rocky Mountain Conservancy Nature Store at some visitor centers. Officials say the transition to a cashless system will reduce the amount of time staff spend managing cash and increase the amount of funding available to support park resources. The American Lung Association gave Boulder County an F grade for ozone pollution in a recent air quality report. According to Longmont Leader, almost a dozen Colorado counties received the lowest grade for their high number of ozone alert days. The study linked wildfires in western states and nearby oil and gas development to higher levels of pollution in Boulder County. Air pollutants are linked with asthma, pulmonary disease, and heart disease. Both Denver and Fort Collins rose higher this year in the study's list of worst ozone pollution in U.S. metro areas. Spring showers and a thunderstorm possible this afternoon with wind gusts up to 24 miles per hour in some areas. A chance of showers overnight. In Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins, highs near 74 and lows around 44. For KGNU, I'm Benita Lee.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Pollinator advocacy groups have been lobbying lawmakers for years to increase legal protections for bees and other animals that play important roles in the food and flora ecosystems. And their activities are starting to result in policy changes. This week, Colorado lawmakers passed SB 266, which will limit the use of neonicotinoid pesticides. This bill now heads to the governor's desk for his signature. Joining me to discuss the legislation is Ellen Montgomery, Public Land Director with Environment Colorado. Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you start off by explaining just what this bill will do exactly?
Sure. So by passing this bill, we are taking some of the sting out of an increasingly toxic environment for bees. Specifically, this bill will get neonicotinoid pesticides off of the shelves where ordinary consumers can't buy them. So if you're a home gardener and you're going to, you know, buy pesticides for your garden, you'll no longer be able to buy neonicotinoids. This is incredibly important as urban areas become a place where we find more and more pollinators and bees, whether it's in our backyards, front yards, and gardens.
Well, and it doesn't take effect immediately. This will go into effect January 1st?
Correct.
And just how significant is this legislation when it comes to pollinator protections?
It's very significant. Up until now, there have been no limits on neonicotinoid use in Colorado. And we're in a position where nearly one in four native bee species is imperiled. Honeybee colonies throughout the country are collapsing. And bee die-offs are a big problem that we're facing. And so removing neonics from pollinator habitat is going to make a big difference to the bees that are in those areas and in that habitat.
Now, this measure doesn't represent a total ban on neonicotinoids. What are some of the permitted uses, and will the limitations really make that much of a dent?
Sure. So it's not a ban at all. It's basically takes neonics off the shelves for sort of ordinary consumers and reclassifies them so that only pesticide dealers can sell neonics. So your Home Depots, your garden stores, they're not pesticide dealers, so they won't be carrying neonics anymore. So it's basically taking them off the shelves of all of the all of the garden stores and all of the places that ordinary people go. Pesticide dealers who you know, may sell to folks using them for agricultural use will still be permitted to sell neonics.
Ella Montgomery, your area of focus at Environment Colorado is on public lands. What does this legislation do with regards to use of neonicotinoids on public lands and parks?
It wouldn't directly affect where they can be used. It's really more about who can sell them. And that's the thing that we've really been focused on is that, you know, we know from our work that Coloradans really love bees and want to see them protected. You know, in fact, 24,000 people signed our petition that we delivered to legislators. And a lot of those people were probably unknowingly contributing to bee die-offs by using pesticides that had neonics without realizing it. And so we hope that, you know, this bill, removing them from the shelves, along with ongoing, you know, public education about what these pesticides do, will make a dent in where they're used across the state.
And as you mentioned, pollinator advocacy groups have been rather active when it comes to local initiatives, petition signings, even lobbying for certain policies. Aside from SB 266, are there any other measures that have passed this legislative session that you consider to be victories for pollinator protections?
This is the big victory for bees, and this is something that we and our allies have been working for several years. The other initiative that Environment Colorado is pursuing is actually outside of the legislature. We are campaigning to convince Amazon not to carry neonics on their online stores, because of course getting them off the shelves here in Colorado helps a lot, but there are people who, you know, will order their garden supplies online, and we want to make sure that neonics are not available to folks ordering garden supplies online anywhere either. So we've been running an ongoing campaign calling on Amazon to stop selling neonics in their online store, and we'll continue to pursue that.
Ellen Montgomery is the Public Land Director with Environment Colorado. Thanks for speaking with me today.
Thank you.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Up next is the Cannabis Report.
And now it's time for the Cannabis Report on KGNU Community Radio. I'm Hanalee Myers, and as always, I'm joined by longtime cannabis correspondent Leland Rucker. Leland, thank you so much for being here.
Always good.
All right, so we're going to cut you a break, and we're going to let the dust settle a little bit on what's happening at the legislature and with some of the bills and cannabis stuff that has been proposed here at the start of May. Always nuts, start of May.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to keep up with what's going on. It's just crazy.
There's a lot.
Unless I was down there all the time watching what was
challenge.
Going on, you wouldn't really know.
So we'll give you some time to sift through all that and see what happens.
But 2 weeks, we'll talk about that.
We'll make sure on the third Thursday of this month to bring you that update on some of the stuff going on with cannabis at the legislature and psychedelics for that matter. But today you're going to tell us a little bit about some movement on the cannabis social equity front. What can you tell us about that?
Well, you know, Governor Jared Polis on Monday announced the launch of a new state-funded loan program for cannabis social equity businesses.
And can you explain, just remind us what a cannabis social equity business is?
Yeah, it's something we didn't really talk about when Colorado legalized originally. There wasn't really talk about social equity. And what it basically is to give everybody the same chance. It's expensive to start a business now. And so the program is intended to help all businesses, no matter where they are, to have enough money to be able to keep going. And it's really a loan program more than anything else.
And my understanding is that California also has a program like this.
Yes.
And that the design is to also try to repair a little bit some of the damage done to specific communities by the war on drugs. I know I've seen them referred to as social equity dispensaries. So dispensaries that have ownership from people from communities of color, LGBTQAI communities, and smaller communities. Is that fair, kind of a description for people who might not have been following it?
Absolutely.
A social equity business or a social equity dispensary. Okay, now that we've got that figured out, go on, do explain.
And this new program that was announced on Monday that Polis announced, It's designed to provide financing to licensed social equity cannabis businesses because it's very expensive. You know, it's difficult to raise the capital needed to launch and grow an enterprise, especially nowadays. And so the initiative will be administered by the State Cannabis Business Office, that's the CBO, within the Colorado Office of Economic Development and International Trade. And it's in partnership with a Portland, Oregon-based organization, New Project, that's working to build generational wealth via the legal cannabis industry for the black and brown communities disproportionately harmed by the war on drugs. And that's the whole idea behind this. And it'll provide low-interest loans of between $50,000 and $150,000 for social equity cannabis businesses to finance renovations, expansions, purchase of equipment, real estate, or to use just as working capital. And they're going to do this as a revolving loan fund. And as loans to business owners are repaid, the interest generated will be reinvested into the fund to support future borrowers. So that's the whole idea, is that this money will continue to do that. And the state's initial investment of $1 million is expected to lend $2.9 million over the next 10 years. That's the whole idea. We'll see if that happens. And it's the it's actually the third Colorado business office funding source available for social equity cannabis businesses, and it's designed to support larger, more established cannabis businesses as they continue to grow. And we hope that it won't just become all big corporations doing it, and that's kind of the hope behind this too. Meanwhile, there are people who aren't that happy about it. They're asking for more support for social equity businesses. Sarah Woodson, who is a social equity advocate and a business owner, she said in Westword that she welcomes the new loan program for eligible companies, but she said she'd like the CBO to update the public on the success of the earlier grant program. Just give us an update on what's going on. She said it'd be interesting to see what has happened with the money that has been given out so far. And she's asking Colorado lawmakers to pass House Bill 1020. We'll know in 2 weeks whether that had any success. But that's a legislation that would allow social equity cannabis businesses to make deliveries directly to consumers without partnering with a licensed dispensary. Right now, you have to partner with a licensed dispensary. And she says that they need about $370,000 to pass the bill, but they can't find that. That's money that they can't find. She's preparing a public records request to learn how much previous funding has been spent. She says if there's over $2 million left, then $370,000 won't be an issue. But if there's $1 million or less, then that's a whole different story. And I think, you know, we'll see that social equity is something that Colorado is playing catch up on, and let's hope that this kind of thing will help that.
Really interesting, too, to see this happening at a time where the cannabis industry in Colorado is getting tighter and tighter, and the profit margins in some ways smaller and smaller. The competition is pretty fierce. So I'd imagine a loan like this could really tip the scales for which businesses end up making it and which ones might end up not making it towards the end, if there is, in fact, the type of competition that we've been hearing for the last year is pretty fierce out there.
That's the intent. That's the intent. We'll see if that happens. And like Sarah Woodson, I question, you know, what's been done so far. Let's just find out and give us an update on it so that we know where we're starting from right now.
Yeah, makes sense. Be great to have that information. Well, Leland, thank you so much for keeping us in the loop. As always, we do appreciate it.
Thank you.
And do tune in for the next Cannabis Report. We'll bring you some more of those bills proposed, and that'll be on the third Thursday of this month. You can catch the Cannabis Report here on KGNU the first and third Thursday of every month. Thanks again, Leland.
Thank you.
For KGNU, I'm Hanalee Myers.
You know what that means. It's time for Radio Nibbles with John Lindorf, and he is in the studio with me today, ready to serve up an appetizer as a prelude to Kitchen Table Talk. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Shannon, and welcome everybody around the big global KGNU kitchen table, where we talk about food news and life And in this case, I have to start with some sad news. Dot Steiner has been an icon in Boulder since the 1970s. I've written about it a few times, a real community gathering spot. Sad to report that Peter Underhill, who's the owner of Dot Steiner, passed away after a short, sudden illness. And it's just sad. He was a big-hearted, good guy who helped a lot of people in the community. So I urge you to support the Dodds family in the coming weeks. We got a bunch of other news. You know, it's farm stand season, and things are just starting to rock and roll. We'll be talking about farms a little more during Kitchen Table Talk. But I'm putting together my annual guide to the roadside farm stands of Boulder County. Sounds like it should be a novel or a movie with Meryl Streep or something. But you can help me by sending me information about the obscure farm stands around the Boulder County and beyond that you know about. You know, I know about all the usual suspects from Olin to Aspen to Cure and Munson, but there's a bunch of really, you know, little ones that pop up, and I'd love to find out about them. You can send me information at nibbles@boulderweekly.com. And there's a few openings I wanted to tell you about. For one thing, the Gold Hill Inn, our friends up in the mountains, have opened, or they open tomorrow. Wow. For their 61st season of dining and music, which is, you know, it's a long time. We got two new restaurants to tell you about. Mangia Panino, which is open inside Boulder's Avante Food Hall. And then there's a new modern Indian restaurant called Chameleon, which is open inside Rosetta Food Hall.
Okay. And, well, there's also, speaking of Boulder icons, there's an icon that's celebrating their anniversary this month.
Yes, the Boulder Tea House is 25 years old this year. My column today in the Boulder Weekly is all about how that came about. If you weren't here 25 years ago, you'd be surprised to find out that, you know, the tea house sat in 200 crates in a water treatment plant for many, many years. And, you know, it wasn't a given that it was going to end up being the icon that it was. So check it out.
Yeah, that's in your Nibbles column this week. And KGNU also will have some coverage of that as well.
Yeah.
So we're rolling into our final minutes, and I need to ask you, what is the best thing that you've tasted lately?
I went and visited my friends at the Cure farm stand, and they said, "Well, you gotta taste this," which is always either interesting or weird. But they gave me some miner's lettuce. It's a green leafy plant, and apparently it was very popular in up in the mountains in mining communities because it popped up early in the spring and provided a source of vitamin C and stuff to fight scurvy. So there.
Well, I would like to invite the listeners to stay tuned to Kitchen Table Talk. That's coming up in just a few minutes. Who's on deck?
Our friend Dan Asher will be here, and we have two special guests, Rainbow Schultz from the Jamestown Merc and Liz Thomas from the Boulder Farmers Market.
Be sure to stay tuned for that. Thank you, John, for Nibbles. And that is all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host and producer, Shannon Young. Thanks to Benita Lee, Jimmy Searfoss, Alexis Kenyon, Hannah Lee Myers, Leland Rucker, and John Lindorf for their contributions to today's program. And a very special thank you to graduating CU intern Alyssa Palazzo, who wraps up her four-credit internship with us today. We've enjoyed having you in the newsroom with us this semester. Good luck with your relocation to Arizona. If you have a comment that you'd like to share with KGNU, you can give us a call at our listener comment line, 303-447-9911. Stay tuned for Kitchen Table Talk. That's going to be coming up on the other side of the BBC News headlines.